Welcome, Detours family, to another episode. I am here with my gorgeous wife, Deb.
Hi, guys.
And we are continuing our topical character study, if you will, of Joseph.
Yep.
I believe last episode we did, we primarily just focused on the initial beginnings of his story in chapter 37 of Genesis. Chapter 38, he's really not discussed, so we're going to jump over to chapter 39.
And some 40.
And some 40, for sure. There's definitely, to me, the chapters go really well hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, we'll try and cover both of those chapters today. But, you know, it's one of those things, like we were praying right before the recording started, that, you know, we would make something that, not we, that it's amazing you can take a story that's thousands and thousands of years old and it's still so extremely relevant today.
Yeah, humanity hasn't changed much, really.
No, we haven't changed much and neither has God.
God has never changed.
He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So how he showed up for Joseph, he'll show up for us, and the lessons he was trying to teach Joseph and everybody else, he's still trying to teach to this day. It's amazing how history repeats itself.
Oh, over and over. But these were hard lessons to learn. So some of the lessons are not fun. I mean, we'll see as we break through some of the stories, there's a lot of waiting. There's a lot of like, why God? I mean, not that Joseph says why God, but I could put myself in Joseph's shoes and I can hear myself going,
yeah,
why?
Well, even in our Bible study last night where we were doing the last chapter of Daniel, Pastor Bill, our mentor, was talking about, you know, hey, 8 out of the 9 fruits of the Spirit's not so bad. 8 out of 9's pretty good. I don't need that patience thing.
Yeah, patience is really, really hard. And it's one of those things that I think we're always going to be in a process of learning.
Yeah.
Because it just clashes against our flesh so deeply. Like, and our time frame is always like, I've been doing this for X amount of time, Lord. This is enough.
Yeah, as if that has anything to do with
it. Right. God's not bound by time.
No. So it's time is a commodity for us, and it's not for him. Mm. He's not bound by time. You know, we are.
Right.
So it's, yeah, who needs patience?
Right. All of us.
Yeah. So Joseph, you know, chapter 39, it kind of breaks down into 3 different sections because we're covering so much. I don't think we're going to read through it like we did in the first episode.
Right.
But we are going to go kind of section by section, if you will. And chapter 39 in Genesis is really broken down into 3 places, right? Last we left, let's just kind of recap.
Joseph is thrown into a pit by his jealous brothers and they were going to let him die. And then Judah says, no, let's sell him. So they sell him to the Ishmaelites. Yeah, something like that. And he's carted off to Egypt.
Yeah, they end up deciding to sell him into slavery. They each take their 2 pieces of silver. And where we leave off is he's...
And tell dad that he's dead.
Yep, tell dad he's passed away. Take his tunic coat of many colors and show it to dad and tell him that he's died. And so that's the last we really see in chapter 37. In chapter 39, where it picks up, is he is now being sold into slavery. So there's really kind of 3 sections. 1, he's being sold into slavery. 2, he arrives at the house where he is a slave and gets to work. And then part 3 of chapter 39 is, we'll just call it the seduction.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. I think the very first part that we kind of want to focus on is the Egyptian official, Potiphar, buys Joseph.
Yes.
So he's kind of like a captain of the guard, if you will, in for Pharaoh. And he is the one that pays the price and he gets Joseph in his home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how God is completely in control yet again. He, in order for the end of the story to come true, he had to be purchased by Potiphar.
Right. He had to wind up in Egypt. How he got there was totally God's decision. You know, he used something that was meant for sin, which was to just totally forsake the brother and put him in a position of power later down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he really hadn't, he has no control of his destination at this point. He's, his entire future is literally in God's hands, which, stepping out of this story, you're like, well, that's the place you want to be, right? You want to be under God's control and in his hands. But in the moment, as Joseph, he has no control over anything. But when, you know, immediately you can look at it and go, if Potiphar had not bought him and some other Egyptian had, the end of the story
might look very different.
Yeah, it doesn't look the way it looks, right? Potiphar is very powerful man.
He's the most powerful man at the moment in
Egypt. Yeah, he's the right-hand man of the Pharaoh.
Right. Right?
He's the right-hand man, so he's a very powerful man. And so there's your connection. When Joseph is connected to God and in God's hands, God places him in the house of the man that's Pharaoh's right-hand man. So it's amazing. I'm sure for Joseph, it's got to be absolutely nerve-wracking.
Sure, he's in a new land, you know, with a bunch of people who are polytheist, and Egypt is very different than where he comes from. And, you know, he's now trying to adapt to a different language. He's trying to figure out what he's supposed to be doing in this role. Shepherds are not respected in any culture in, you know, the Middle East at that time, let alone in Egypt. You know,
yeah,
they're looked down upon very much so. So he's Hebrew and he's a shepherd. So two strikes against him. And now he's a slave.
Now he's a slave in the house of a man that is connected somehow to the religious system of Egypt, right? You know, Potiphar, it's like the term Pharaoh. Pharaoh isn't the name. Pharaoh is the position. Same thing with Potiphar. It literally translates to devoted to the sun, which the sun god in Egyptian culture was a huge deal. So we know that he was connected to religion in some way. We also know, like we mentioned earlier, he's the right-hand man of Pharaoh. But Joseph does, you know, I'm sure he knows that he's in the possession of a powerful man. Does he know that he's in the possession of the second man in charge of Egypt? That'd be pretty interesting. Again, I so wish we miss out on all the thought process that Joseph has as all this chaos is happening.
We'll have to ask him in heaven.
Yeah, no kidding.
How long take you to figure out, wow, I'm in a position where I'm serving the right-hand guy?
Yeah, and what is that like? Is that intimidating? Mm-hmm. What is he like? To be the right-hand man, everyone is going to say, if it's anything like today, a lot of men with a lot of power are oftentimes surrounded by yes men and this, that, and the other. I can only imagine the fear that would be in people when Potiphar is sitting there talking to them, because he is the right-hand man.
Yeah.
It's going to be, not even speaking the language, it's going to be pretty clear pretty quick that, all right, there's something to this Potiphar.
Right.
So, yeah, an interesting detail is just where God places him right out of the gate.
That's true, and there's no other place he's going to be the most useful at this point for the greater good of the story. And so here he is in this home. And, well, powerful men have beautiful wives.
Yeah, I mean, that's the third part of the chapter, so we'll get to that here shortly. But I think before we even transition into what I jokingly referred to as the seduction earlier, you know, again, he is with Potiphar, who's a very powerful man, and yet the Bible says the Lord was with him. Mm-hmm. So I will joke that Joseph had the Midas touch. Everything that he touched turned to gold. God was with him. So all of imagine the responsibilities that are handed down to the right-hand man of Pharaoh.
Right.
And he's turning around asking help or commanding help of his slaves. And all of a sudden there's this one particular new slave that God is with, that one slave. And everything he touches has God's favor in it.
Yeah.
Whatever he's being asked to handle has God's favor.
Yeah, that's true. And that's something that sets him apart from anybody else. And I'm sure that he observed his character and his integrity, because you don't have a life of Joseph without having a life of integrity, you know. And Joseph was a faithful man to God. So I'm sure he witnessed Joseph's relationship with God. I mean, anyone that's in love with God, it overflows in everything that they do, in everything that they say, and how they treat people, and how they, what is their work ethic? So I'm sure he is oozing, you know, Yahweh. Just everything about him speaks of God, I'm sure.
And Joseph trusts God in the midst of a very difficult situation. God has picked him up out of his homeland. Mm-hmm. He's been treated very unfairly, thrown into this area where he's clearly working for a man of power, doesn't speak the language, doesn't know anything. He's literally a fish out of water, and yet he still trusts God. The level of confusion or just going, what is happening in my life?
Yeah, I mean, imagine. I mean, you just really put yourself in the position of, like, everything that you know has been ripped from you in such a brutal and violent way, and now you're here, and, yeah, again, everything is just chaotic, and yet he is still faithful. And there are times where even just a little bit of disruption makes me cranky and makes me, like, okay, I guess I have to deal with this now. You know, sometimes I reflect on my own attitude and I'm like, wow, chill out, girl. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you ever feel that way about yourself, but we've had a very cranky 2 years, so.
Yeah, and, you know, what's interesting here is a lot of times you feel like maybe you have to be in a place of authority for God to see you and for God to bless you. And that's the opposite of what's mm-hmm. happening with Joseph. He is the lowest of the low with no authority whatsoever. He may not even understand the language of the people that surrounds him.
Right.
And yet God was with him and God was still blessing him, even though he was the opposite of authority.
Mm.
You know, so many times you may think, you know, at work, you need to have a position of authority or management or this, that, and the other in order for God to work through you. And the reality is you don't at all. All you have to do is just show up and be in fellowship with Christ, and he'll be with you and he'll bless you.
Yeah.
And I think Joseph is he's just a perfect example of that, where he was surrounded by every person he ran into had more authority than he did. But yet God was with him and God was blessing him. All, like I think we mentioned it in the last episode, all the people surrounding him, polytheists, this, that, but God's eye was on Egypt and his eye was on Joseph, because Joseph was a righteous man. He was a believer. He had faith and he knew God was with him and God was in fellowship. So in the middle of all of that, you know, Antichrist, God still kept his eye on Egypt because of Joseph. And even though Joseph was the lowest of the low, God was with him and God blessed him. And so many times you start reading in the news, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and all this stuff, all this space exploration, you can say, you know, have whatever position you want. But what's interesting is as they talk to all these guys and they talk about the size of some of these black holes and all this universe, they always come back to, it's always so humbling to realize how small we actually are, and yet you mean so much to Christ.
It's amazing. It's amazing that we're just nothing but a speck, and yet God considers us and loves us and died for us. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, and just
that his thoughts, wait, let me just say that Jesus tells us his thoughts are like grains of sand. Like, that's how much God thinks about us.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just overwhelmingly, how do I want to say it? Just, it brings me so much joy.
And just so much peace.
Peace.
To me, it bring that those types of thoughts always bring me peace, because I can get caught up in, I can have a bunch of thoughts strung together that give me anxiety. But when I think of the number of grains of sand on the seashore and God has meditated on that over me, just the peace is always so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, and what's still incredible is Joseph, I believe a big part of the reason why God blesses Joseph is because he truly was there to serve. Yeah, he was a servant and he was forced into it, but he still served to the best of his ability, even though it was unfair, even right. though he didn't know any of these people, even though he was an alien.
Yeah.
Quite literally an alien. He still showed up to serve. So once again, showing that correlation between Joseph and Christ. Christ came down to this world. If anyone understood alien, that was Christ coming into sin, you know, a world filled with sin.
Sure.
And being perfect, and yet he came to serve. So it's, you know, again, that parallel between Joseph and Jesus. So amazing, amazing stuff. But yeah, so basically he's got all this favor from God. Everything he touches turns to gold, as I joked earlier with the Midas touch, where literally anything he touches is multiplied. And so, of course, you know, when we were talking about having this discussion, we were talking last night on the phone. You know, I talked about how Potiphar is going to be a very powerful man, and right. powerful men attract beautiful women.
Sure.
You never see NBA or NFL players with unattractive women. You don't see the Jeff Bezos of the world. No. You don't see any of them.
His wife is gorgeous.
Yeah, or I guess a fiance. I don't know if they're married or not. But either way, typically the more power you have as a man...
Or money.
Well, money is power, and the more you have of it, the better looking the woman.
Sure.
So Potiphar's wife.
Oh, yeah.
She is something else.
Yep.
So
The seductress.
The seductress. So let's talk a little bit about women in Egyptian culture.
Oh, my gosh. They invented, you know, the great eyeliner, all the makeup and the perfume and... some of the beauty standards we still use today are from Egypt. They were quite promiscuous, actually. Their culture, women in that culture, actually. So you have this this beautiful woman who's probably decked to the nine because she's got the money to do all the fancy clothes and jewelry, and her, you know, she probably has, you know, servants to make her look beautiful every day. And she's waiting around in the house, and her powerful husband's off doing work. She's lonely, probably, and bored. Lonely and bored are never a good combo.
And here comes Joseph. Everything he touches turns to gold.
Yep. And the Bible does refer to him as ruddy, which is King James version of he was a good-looking dude. So he's, you know, he's about 18. He's good looking, you know.
Yeah.
She's like, wow, who's this kid?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always interesting that he is only 18.
Yeah.
He's everything that's happened with his brothers. And I mean, Abraham's referred to as the father of faith. So what does that make Joseph, you know, getting the dreams and believing it? And every time he does something right, he gets punished for it. And, you know, he still sticks to his gun. It's like this.
He's a pillar, man. He's a pillar in the faith. And you look at him and you're like, wow, dude, if anyone could be bitter and pissed off about your situation, you literally could be if you were Joseph. And he's not.
No one would blame him.
Right.
But he does have the right attitude. So, again, God continues to bless him. So, this very powerful man clearly is going to have a gorgeous, gorgeous wife. Mm-hmm. Everything that Joseph touches turns to gold.
Yeah.
He's got God's favor, and God's favor leads to, you know, capturing the eye of Potiphar's wife.
And she basically throws herself at him and says, lay with me. Like, I want you.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah, this isn't, it wasn't just a one-time thing.
No.
It was pursuing him. Like,
aggressively.
Yes. Aggressively. Thank you. Yes.
So what, you know, what, and what's interesting is if anybody could have gotten away with it from a worldly perspective, it probably was Joseph because, again, he probably didn't even speak the language of these
people.
Just
who
would suspect? Yeah, who would suspect him of anything?
Right.
He's literally a nobody to this house that he's living in.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody from a worldly perspective could have gotten away with it, it was him.
Right. And she had planned, you know, all the other servants to be out of town or to be not there. I mean, she was very calculated, very manipulative.
Yeah, 100%. And mm-hmm. yes, she presents herself, hey, lie with me. You know.
And he keeps turning her down. And, you know, there's something about being a beautiful woman and being turned down. It's not, I can't feel good to the ego. So that probably made her push a little harder.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, this kid doesn't want me. Look at me. Like, I can imagine the ego that's happening for her to continue to pursue. So she's not embarrassed by the first turn down. She's not embarrassed by the second turn down. Basically, if you swap a position around and you say a man was doing this to a woman, it'd be, you know, sexual harassment for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet he has such a high opinion of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
Because he doesn't even say, how can I do this to my God? Is like, no, you're the only thing that Potiphar has not put into my hand. Like the first thing he said was not how can I do this to my master Potiphar? How could I do this to my God? Was his very first priority. And that speaks volumes of like reverencing and fearing, you know, a healthy, respectful fear of the Lord. Just, I don't want to disappoint you, Lord. I don't want to sin against you, Lord.
And that's what this world misses so much. I certainly don't know what it was like back in the Genesis days, but we miss
the fear
of the Lord. No, it's...
I think we're very heavy on the grace and the love, and those are beautiful attributes to God. But when you only talk about those things from a pulpit, his forgiveness, his grace, his mercy, and those things do draw you to the Lord. His kindness and his goodness draws you. We love him because he first loved us. But when you don't balance that with the awe and the power and the might and how holy God is, when we're not talking about those things, you're not going to have the same reverence for the Lord, because there's no power with just the love and the grace. I mean, if it's amazing and it makes you so deeply grateful, but we need a better approach, I think, in the Western church to talk about God's power. And I think that's why I enjoy our mentor Bill so much. It's like, I leave awestruck of God. I mean, awestruck.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's the God I serve. I always feel a reverence, an awe, a power that, you know, and these are scriptures I've read over and over, and somehow he extrapolates the beauty of how God interweaves his power with his love and grace. It's such a beautiful combination. So there is that lack of, I think you're right, fear of God.
And I think part of what I struggle with as Christians, we're so lucky. Our little tiny Calvary Chapel here in Central Florida graduated a little bit, and we moved into a brand new building that's over 100 years old, and it has the beautiful stained glass windows, and you know, it's got the warmth of all the wood, the
I
pews,
love that.
You know, it
feels
really,
like a real church.
Yeah. And I think one of the weaknesses of the West and the church in the West is the buildings that we typically erect for churches do not show reverence for God. It's law. There are so many where you walk in and if someone wasn't standing behind a pulpit, you would never know that it wasn't a Tony Robbins conference.
Well, I think that's pretty indicative of non-denominational churches, but you go into a Lutheran church, you go into a Catholic church, they are different buildings.
They are. Yeah. But that's what's dominating a lot of the West is the non-denominational.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of things that I, you know, would disagree with from Catholicism, but one of the things that you know, we saw when we were over in Poland and so on and so forth. Just the, it is art. You're surrounded by reminders of what Christ actually did.
Right.
You know, where churches here in the West, like I said, you can walk in there and you can't even find a cross or a scripture or anything in the sanctuary. It just looks like a building.
It looks like a stage.
Yeah. And I think it starts with that. But it just, yeah, just that reverence is lacking, and it reflects in our opinion of Christ and what it's become. We don't appreciate truly how holy he really is. The illustration of I grew up in Chicago in the 90s, so Michael Jordan was everything. When I was a little kid, man, I'd do a bunch of, you know, little side jobs, cutting lawns and this, that, and the other with the goal of saving up money to get Air Jordan shoes, and you buy them. And, you know, several of them that I bought were white, and man alive, when that first little nick or something showed up on that white shoe, that's all you could see, even though 99.9% of the shoe was still gorgeous and perfect and the leather and then stitches.
Did you try to scrub it off?
Yeah, and then you would just make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but all you could see was that little, whether it was a grass stain or a little cut from a rock or whatever it was, but it was because the shoes were so beautiful and perfect in your eyes that at the first blemish, that was all you could see. Now imagine the exponential amount of goodness that God is above a pair of silly shoes.
Oh, yeah.
He's the creator of the universe, how perfect he is, and just how much one little blemish, how I can't even imagine how you could see anything else. One little sin sitting next to him because he is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And we've definitely lost the reverence, but Joseph hadn't.
Right.
Joseph was sitting there going, you are so good, and this is being presented to me. Forget everything else. If I did this, what would I say to you?
Right. What would our relationship be like if I did this?
Yeah.
And he did the wise thing. He ran. And that's something that we have to really look at and go, boy, that was smart. Because you know, you could say to yourself, no, I'm fine. I'm not tempted. Listen, being tempted is not a sin. It's what you do with that temptation that becomes the sin. And yet he put himself in a position where I don't want to have to battle my flesh. I'm getting the heck out of here.
Yeah.
And that's wise. And that's something we all need to think about when stuff gets really, really unbearably tempting.
Yeah.
It's okay. Run.
And it's amazing because this world is so driven by feelings that this would be a situation where the flesh can give Joseph the feeling of, man, this is okay.
Well, think about like the attention that's being lavished on him. Like I'm sure it's, you know, she's a beautiful woman and she wants me. She could have any man in the world and she wants me. I mean, your ego can talk to you in lots of ways. Your flesh can convince you of wickedness real quick. And that's why the running is where the wisdom is. Because if he would have stayed any longer, he could have probably said a million and one excuses. No one knows me here. No one would suspect. She's lonely. I'm doing her a favor. I mean, this poor girl's sitting alone in the house while her husband's running the world. You know, he could have said a million things, to himself.
Yeah, the heart always makes a convert of the mind, right?
Yes.
So Joseph is clearly showing that his heart is in the right place. His mind mm-hmm. can be sitting there thinking of, you know, justifying this, that, or the other. But when he turns to his heart, again, he blocks out his feelings. He blocks out the flesh.
Right.
And the spirit talks. And the spirit says,
flee.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Strap yourself to an Acme rocket and launch yourself as far away from here as you can get.
Oh, just got a vision of the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
It's pretty much, you know, holding up the sign mm-hmm. with the arrow on it that says help. That's how I see Joseph here.
Yeah.
And so he honors God and he does the right thing. This is what's so baffling is once again, he does the right thing.
And then he's accused of rape. Yes. And
my goodness.
I mean, what a horrible thing to be accused of. And she also goes on to say, like, she kind of throws her husband under the bus, too. Like, this Hebrew he brought into the house. Like, he brought this shepherd, this dirty Hebrew, in a sense, is what she's saying. And, you know, some scholars think he probably knew what his wife was like, you sure. know?
Yeah.
And that's why he could have just easily executed him. If he really believed his wife, he would have executed Joseph, but he didn't. He put him in a, you know, what we would call like, you know, minimum security fancy prison.
Yeah.
He put him in the king's prison.
Yeah. So, yeah. So once again, Joseph not doing anything wrong gets punished.
Mm-hmm.
So again, where is Joseph's mindset here?
Yeah.
Going, okay, God, what the heck else are you going to do here? What else are you going to allow? Like, what are you trying to teach me? What is this journey, right? It's not the destination. It's the journey. You gave me the destination and a vision.
Right. And I believe that vision, God.
He's holding on to it. But this is the journey. Like, I'm going to prison now, and I didn't do anything to my brothers. And I wound up in slavery. I didn't do anything to Potiphar or his wife. And now I'm thrown right. into prison.
And some people might go, is God even fair? And I think that there's no fairness court. You're not going to take God to fairness court.
Yeah.
Like, God's not worried about fairness as much as he's worried about your character and what the purpose is he has for you. And sometimes that means you're going to be in uncomfortable places that seem totally unfair, but yet God is still good, and that grates against your humanity, and it's honest to say that doesn't make sense to me, God. I don't get it. And you know, you also hear David echo that in a lot of his psalms, like why Lord, or even the laments psalms, right? They're crying out why. It's normal to go, I don't get this. But like David, always comes back to, but I know who you are, God.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. And I really don't think it seems fair, but I know your character. I know who you are. So you're going to show me how this is all going to work out.
That's the cool part of the lament psalms, is it's always David lamenting, but he always faithfully comes back and goes, but I know you're good.
Yeah.
And I know you've got this figured out. He could be sitting there going, God, have you forgotten about me? Screaming.
Yeah. You could hear his grief and his pain.
Yeah. You can.
He didn't have an easy life.
And yet he'll end with hope. He right. always ends with God's goodness.
Yes.
Every single lament psalm, it ends in God's goodness.
And it's as if he's self-talking himself back into, like, you got to almost preach to yourself when things get horrible.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, the devil's preaching to you.
Yeah, the flesh and the spirit, they'll battle all the time. That's the whole point of fasting, is to deny the body,
mm-hmm.
deny what the body wants so that the spirit
gets stronger.
Yeah, that's the whole point of that, so that you are not led by emotion, you're led by the what should I do.
Right, not what I want to do, but what should I do.
Yeah, that's the what's so scary about the prosperity gospel is it's always about what I want and, mm-hmm. and, you know, what is God going to do for me, as opposed to, no, even when things are awful, like Joseph,
right?
What should you be doing? Focus on the should. Mm-hmm.
I think the prosperity gospel puts God in a position of like a genie in a bottle, and puts the believer as the performer. Yeah. I did this for you. I did that for you. I deserve health, wealth, and, you know, prosperity. We really truly don't deserve anything.
Yeah.
The fact that God gives us anything is amazing to me, that he's merciful to us when we are so fallen.
Yeah.
And that doesn't translate across the globe. If it doesn't translate across the globe to the least of the least, yeah. How are you saying that to the person that's, you know, in the slums of India?
Yeah. Take the prosperity gospel to Calcutta and see how many people line up to listen to you.
Yeah.
There's nobody going to show up.
No.
And, you know, again, Joseph just proves that point. He has God's favor. That's what's so strange, is he has God's favor, mm-hmm. and he's being thrown in prison.
Yeah, it grates against
God is
our...
with him. He's got the Midas touch.
Yeah.
Next stop is a prison cell.
And you know what? He's not there for 6 months to a year. He is there a very long time.
Yeah,
estimate anywhere between 11 and 13 years.
Yeah, I think the most scholars will say it's 11 years where he's in prison before the baker and the butler show up. And then after they leave is another 2 years. So you're looking at, he goes in, rough estimate, at 18 years of age.
Right.
He's in prison at 18. The baker and the butler show up. He's 29. He's still in prison. Mm-hmm. And he finally gets out around age 31. So can you imagine God sitting there saying, you're going to sit in this cell and you and I are going to spend 13 years together? What would the conversations between you and God be like when all you have is him in a prison cell and you're innocent and you're wrestling with God going, what are you looking for? A change in me? Are you looking for a change in the world's circumstances? Did I really, the scales of justice are not even here, God, and you're a God of justice. What's going on? My brothers, they're out there investing their silver or.
Yeah. But I think the brothers are a valid point, because Joseph can no longer blame his brothers. He's in prison now for what? Like, he now has to ask God, like, it's not my brother's fault that I'm here. Like, I'm here because you've placed me here.
Yeah.
So that intimacy between him and God is now that grapple. And some of the deepest levels of intimacy I've ever had with the Lord really is a grapple. I mean, it's a wrestle with him, and he welcomes that.
Like, oh, of course, he can handle it.
Yeah, he's not upset that I'm questioning and asking things and wondering and crying, and I'm sure there was a lot of grappling Joseph had.
Well, and you have to grapple to see more of who God is. If you mm-hmm. don't wrestle and you don't meditate with that stuff, you're going to miss so much of the equation, and that's what's incredible here about Joseph. Can you, he's given favor in prison. We know that at the end of chapter 39, where he's looked on favorably.
Yes. He's kind of in a position of leadership, even in prison.
Yeah.
So it's testing ground for his leadership. You know, he's put in a position in the slave place where he's serving a leader. He's now in prison and he's the leader. He's helping the baker and the butler in prison by ministering to them. You know, this is what your dream means. This is what's going to happen. Hey, please remember me. So there's this ministering, this servant leadership is what God's probably working in him and through him for what he has in store for him later down the road.
Yeah, and so we're in case you're not familiar with the story, right? So Potiphar's right. wife, accuses Joseph of rape. He gets thrown in prison. He is there for scholars estimate 11 years. And all of a sudden, two people, a baker and a butler, show up in the prison. And they are connected to Pharaoh.
Right.
One basically brings him his food. The other brings him his drinks.
Yeah, the butler is really like a cupbearer. So he's the one that tests all the wine and food. So that guy, that guy has a terrible job.
Yeah, but there's still that very intimate connection with Pharaoh. These are guys that are literally their job is to be the first line of defense in case there's someone trying to take Pharaoh's life.
Right, trying to poison him.
Yeah, so the question becomes, okay, if they were in prison, was it because Pharaoh believed that they were trying to take his life, or were they trying to do anything a little fishy? You know, those are the thoughts that go through my mind when I see the guys that are supposed to be keeping Pharaoh alive are in prison. Is it because Pharaoh is suspecting them of, you know, some sort of shenanigans on some level?
Shenanigans. Yeah. I love that word. Maybe he's suspicious of them.
And even now, you know, he's in prison and like you said, he is still serving.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and he serves these guys and the baker and the butler come in there and they each have a dream. And they have some, you know, strange dreams, and they need an interpreter,
right,
for these dreams. And what's amazing, you and I were talking yesterday, in Egyptian culture, when you interpret a dream and that dream comes true, Egyptian culture, they believed that the interpreter was either solely responsible for that dream coming true or played a part in it.
Right.
So the baker and the butler have these dreams and Joseph interprets the dreams. And when the dreams end up coming true, that would be in Egyptian culture, a huge sign that Joseph is a deity.
Right. In their culture, that's what he was deified now.
Yes. So that is pretty crazy because they forget about him.
Right. Right. And you made a point last night, like only God could do that. Only God could give them spiritual amnesia.
I mean, the doors that God closes, no one can open. And the doors that God opens, no one can close.
That is the truth.
This is a perfect example of God closing a door on Joseph going, I know you've waited 11 years. And can you imagine the excitement that when he sits there and he gets the story of these dreams from these guys, he's like, hold on, I had dreams years ago and I interpreted, you know, God gave me dreams and he gave me visions. You're having dreams. Tell me about them. And he's got to be getting excited because this is the first blip on the radar that he's seen in 11 years that God hasn't forgotten about him. He interprets these guys' dreams.
And they come true.
They come true. Can you imagine the anticipation and the excitement on Joseph going, any minute somebody's going to come in here and they're going to get me out of here.
Right. And 2 years later, there he is.
Nothing happened, but it's because God closed the door. But can why? Why did God close the door? Is it because Joseph's heart wasn't quite ready yet? Was it because, hey, God's timing is perfect and
it's not the right time?
Joseph, you may be ready, but the situation isn't ready yet.
Right. It's still cooking.
Yeah.
Remember, he's got to be the one that, you know, helps ward off famine. And maybe it's not, you know, seasonally time for that. So he's got to wait. That, you know, that famous waiting we all love to do.
Yeah. And the anticipation and the disappointment that Joseph must have had, you know, he's got to be so excited when the baker and the butler are leaving and just, oh my gosh, they're going to know that I'm here.
Right.
And a day goes by and he's still got to be excited. Oh man, maybe they just haven't had a chance to tell people, the right people yet, you know, and those days turn into several days and those weeks, several days turn into weeks
and years.
And how the excitement must have turned into disappointment.
And disappointment can be very, very crushing. I think disappointment does more to crush a spirit than even other things like anger or frustration. And yet, even in the crushing, God is good. I know it doesn't make sense, but he never dropped the ball with, he never accused God of not being good. And that's something we see in Job as well. He never accuses God of not being good in the midst of all of the grief and all of the disappointment. There's never an accusation slung at God. And that speaks immense to his character, to his faith, to his own like self-talk. What do you have to say to yourself for 11 years to hold on? How deep was his faith prior, at, you know, as a young boy?
Yeah.
Like he had to have strong foundations of faith to sustain the amount of grief, disappointment, anger, injustice, what feels like injustice. He has to have a deep level of faith in order to hang on to that and not let it corrupt him and change him, but to keep hanging on to the Lord.
And does he ever... How, like, you think about your life, typically most people look at their 20s as the best years of their life.
It's my prime.
The prime years of Joseph's life from 18 to 31, the prime of his life, he did nothing wrong and he lost all of those years.
But did he lose them?
From
a worldly perspective, yes, he lost them.
When you're sitting in prison on year 12, does that thought cross your mind going, but God, this, when you're young and you're, every kid coming out of college wants to go into the world and change it, right? You're ready. You're ambitious. You're raring to go. And here's Joseph sitting in a prison cell during those years of his life, sitting there going, but I just want to change the world. And I'm sitting here in a prison, and I did nothing wrong. You know, what is God telling him? Is God silent during those 11, 13 years?
We have no idea.
Crazy.
But it'd be rare in my mind to think God would be silent to him. Even if God doesn't speak an audible word to you, God is speaking in your heart.
Yeah, but, you know... Is he sitting there going, Joseph, do you trust me? Is that him speaking? Joseph, do you trust me? Year one, Joseph, do you trust me? Year two, Joseph, do you trust me? Year three, Joseph,
do you trust me?
Come on now. So I have no doubt that there was something to sit and pray and be in God's presence as deeply as he was for as long as he was. I mean, maybe God was silent, but I have no doubt that God was talking to him. Of course, it's speculation, but...
And here's a man of faith that's in prison with other people. There's no doubt in my mind, when you love the Lord that much, that you're talking about your God, especially with polytheist. I mean, they're trapped with him now. For 11 years, they're going to hear nothing about their gods and everything about the God of the Hebrews.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the witnessing opportunity he must have had, because when he does eventually become a position of power, there's great respect for Joseph.
Yep.
And they know he's not, it's not like he had to lie and say, I'm an Egyptian. Like, they knew he was a Hebrew from the get-go.
Yep, he looks different, he talks different.
Yep.
He dresses different.
And even, you know, if he adapts to the visual look of an Egyptian in a position of power, he is nothing more than putting on, you know, a suit and tie and going to work to fit the part. But he is Joseph through and through. So how many people had passed through that prison in 13 years? How many of them heard about the God of the Hebrews?
Yeah.
So
he's so... He has to be so comfortable with who he is.
Mm.
There has to be a level of that in him. I'm sure there could have been times where it wavered and so on and so forth. I mean, you and I went through a 19-month waiting period for you, and there were absolutely times. It was crystal clear to me that when you know, the first, for the audience, Deb and I dated two times. One time for about 6 months, and then we were separated for about 19, 20 months, and then we got back
together.
You added
two more months. 18 months, no?
No. Believe me, I know.
I believe you. You were
counting the days. But when we dated the first time, when you left, God absolutely did tell me that we were going to be together. But then entered into a year and a half of complete silence, more or less complete silence from you. Didn't see you, didn't hear from you, nothing. You better believe during that waiting period, I sat there and I said, God, did I hear you correctly? Or did I manifest that? Because
I
wanted
that up in my mind, yeah, because I wanted it.
You know, is that really what you said to me? And that was only 18 months. This guy's sitting in there for 13 years, you know, and it was inescapably clear what God said at the beginning of our separation. But just time, where can wear you down? And I was very faithful to God during that time away. And I still had that thought process. I fasted and prayed tremendously. So I can relate to Joseph on some level, but his waiting was so much more than ever I had to deal with. But that's why I'm so curious what his thought process, what is he wrestling with? Any, how do you learn anything when you're in prison? I guess, you know, just nothing but God speaking to you has just got to be just pure wisdom.
Mm. Yes.
You're not being pulled, you know, today we have so many distractions in social media and this, that, and the other. I know they didn't have all that then, but there was plenty of distractions no matter what.
Sure, there's
God
nothing
had
new.
Joseph's full attention when he was in prison.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, all of this heavenly wisdom is being poured into you.
Yeah, and every task he took on, I'm sure there was a lesson for him to learn that prepared him for his leadership. That's the thing we want the finished result sometimes. We want the glory story. We want the happy ending. But all of that comes with work. All of that comes with the lesson. The lesson's not fun. I mean, the victory's great. It's like, yay, I'm here. But everything he did in those years prepared him for the man he was going to be to save a nation from famine and to forgive his brothers and to be the man God is calling him to be. There was no time wasted in God's economy. It looks different in our economy, but every task that he did, because, you know, they're not sitting around watching TV and working out like they do in American prisons. I mean, they were, you know, even in the king's prison, I'm sure there was work to be done. So yeah. Every task he took on, God is using that as an object lesson.
And everything that was happening to Joseph, if the baker and the butler had gotten Joseph out of prison, I think God would have lost some of the glory because some of the credit would have gone to them.
That's a good point.
Where by God closing the door and making them forget that he was in prison, and yet 2 years later is remembered.
Right.
That's
you
God.
You can only attest that to God.
Yeah. And that was the same thing with you and I, you know, when you were away, that I did not come pursue you because God told me not to. He said, when it's time, I will put you two back together because that's how I get the glory.
Mm.
It's by no other means. And he did. And I believe that to be true here. We're part of the reason why Joseph had to wait an additional 2 years was just so that God got that much more glory in this story. So it's.
And not glory just for his glory's sake, which he deserves glory, but how much more did that strengthen the faith of Joseph even in those two more years? Because now. How much more does it speak to God's sovereignty? Yeah. I will not open a door until I'm ready to open that door for you. So think about all the times that he'll have in the future where he's got to make a decision in a very powerful position. And he has to go, okay, God, I know that you're going to open doors and close them. Is this the door you want opened?
Yeah.
Because if it is, you're going to bust it down. And if it isn't, it's closed. And so that lesson in sovereignty probably made him a much better leader.
Yeah. And we were even, when we were prepping for this episode, we were talking last night, we brought up the old Asian proverb of how there's a tremendous difference. I couldn't say it verbatim or anything, mm-hmm. but the gist of it is there's a big difference between doing nothing and waiting.
Yeah.
And that's where you wonder of the 13 years, what percentage of that was Joseph waiting versus Joseph doing nothing? Waiting is anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting is going, I know something's coming. Don't know, may not know what it is. Maybe I do. But there's anticipation that something's going to happen. And Joseph is sitting in prison waiting for God. He's not sitting in prison doing nothing. You don't even have to be doing the right thing. And I think Paul is a perfect example of that. The disciples were perfect examples of that. You didn't hear stories about the disciple that was in the hammock waiting. Paul was not sitting around waiting. He was out doing the wrong thing. He was out persecuting.
Yes,
he was doing the wrong. He was killing Christians viciously, but he wasn't sitting around doing nothing. So neither was Joseph. Joseph wasn't doing nothing. Joseph was waiting. And that's so powerful to sit and expect something of God. God, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait on you and I'm going to expect something big. I expect you to blow my mind.
Think about that, though. That takes faith.
Oh, of course it does.
Yeah, doing nothing takes no faith. Doing nothing is let me go numb and wait for the days to pass me by.
Yeah.
Which I think we have a lot of that in our culture. We're very easily like, let me numb out and watch Netflix. Let me numb out and go do X, Y, and Z.
Oh, drugs and alcohol. How many people just want to go to the bar and have a few drinks, right? Because you don't want, you want to numb out. And I don't see that in Joseph.
No.
I don't see him numbing out. I see him waiting on God, going, I don't understand. Maybe he's saying, I don't understand. But same as David, I know that you're good.
Right.
And you made a promise to me, and you gave that to me in a vision, and I believe that you're going to bring that into fruition.
Mm.
Because that's who you are. You don't make promises you can't keep. So it's a powerful story. So we got through chapter 40. We're going to continue on in the story in the next episode.
Yes.
Because this is a crazy story. Joseph's just constant up and down in his story.
You know, the last part of the story really is such a great lesson in just forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's so needed in today's world. There is no empathy and there's no forgiveness in today's world. And I think, when we get to it and Joseph, just lets the healing waters flow. It's a beautiful scene with him. So I can't wait until we get to it.
Me too.
But thank you guys for joining us on this episode. We have gone through to chapter 40 in Genesis with Joseph's story. We will continue on in 41 next week.
Yep, we'll wrap up his life story in part 3.
Yeah, should be good. Well, thank you for hanging out and chatting with me.
Likewise.
Had a good time.
I always do with you.
Well, we hope you guys did as well, and we will catch you in a couple more weeks.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.